these technologies, they didn't replace jobs. They just enhanced our abilities and forced us how to use them. So as companies are starting to understand the value of generative AI, they are adding skill sets to their teams.
That's Raycomb Morrison talking about the recent rapid growth of AI technologies like generative AI and the long-term implications on sustainability and ethics. Hi, I'm Lisa Yong, Director of Consumer Tech at WGSN, and I'm here with Raycomb Morrison, Head of CMF. For those of you who are not familiar with CMF, it is a specialized area of design that focuses on color, material, and finish development. Let's start with you, Reiko. Here's a question. With a new generation of creatives using AI as another tool in the design toolbox, do you think different generations perceive or think about AI differently?
AI is accelerating the design process by allowing designers to explore a wide variety of concepts that they don't generate themselves. They don't have to do that work. And they're doing it in a very short amount of time. So this allows them to sift through the design directions that are working and filter out those that are not working so they can quickly make decisions, move forward with the design process. So design teams are customizing AI tools. They're feeding them sketches that direct the AI image generation. They don't want to work purely off of public database. So they are feeding the AI their proprietary work, also combining it with the public database to get very unique solutions.
I think there's definitely a lot of things going on right now, right? But there is certainly this growing fear that AI will take away jobs. So as a creative yourself, do you think Gen AI tools will take away design jobs as well?
No, not at all. From what I'm hearing, it will only create new jobs. The landscape is definitely shifting, and it'll be necessary for creatives to learn how to use AI tools in order for them to remain competitive. So maybe if you're not familiar with AI, you might lose your job, but I really highly doubt that if you stay creative. But I like to think of it as the time when designers were creating renderings with markers. You know, that seems like such a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was during my time when we transitioned from markers to Photoshop. And, you know, the whole graphic design industry was changing at that time, too, with Illustrator. People were worried that it was going to put people out of work. But designers just adopted those skill sets and just became better. And then everybody was using those tools. Or, you know, it's like when 3D rendering came about and programs like KeyShot were introduced, and now everybody's using them. So these technologies, they didn't replace jobs. They just enhanced our abilities and forced us how to use them. So as companies are starting to understand the value of generative AI, they are adding skill sets to their teams, not just designers, but they're adding people with technology skill sets that can help build customized AI systems. And that, you know, these systems are what come up with original concepts instead of the status quo that is generated from the public databases.
I guess designers just have to learn and cope and improve on their skill sets because of that. So I'd like to share an anecdote, actually. I spoke to an interaction design professor from Art Center. A big shout out to Todd. He told me something quite memorable. He said that designers often say Gen AI tools give them superpowers. I've never heard it described like that before, and it stuck with me, right? So I think he's right. Every creative needs a boost of confidence sometimes to push their imagination further, to really challenge themselves, to try out new crazy ideas, right? And now with the help of AI. So I think, yes, instead of fearing AI taking away jobs, designers should really learn how to sharpen their creative skills so that they can future-proof their jobs or even maybe advance into something better. So, Reiko, how do you envision AI to evolve, especially with regards to design development and CMF?
I think AI will become a very integral part of the CMF design development process. This is the exploration part where we can go through a lot of ideas very quickly, and it will provide inspiration for new color combinations, things that, you know, we're not on our mind that the AI comes up with, and we look at it and we just know intuitively, like, wow, that's a cool color combination. Even textures that we didn't think of, even new physical materials. There's AI systems now that are helping designers and engineers figure out new composites and, you know, how to make new materials more efficiently. So these are all very new developments in their infancy right now, but they're definitely coming down the pipeline. And AI will help us figure out how to make these really complex digital creations that we see built in 3D in our computers, making these become a reality because they are so much more complex and not just, you know, injection molded objects. They could be 3D printed or additive manufactured for mass produced products. And what I'm also excited about is how AI will make mass customization effortless. You know, this will analyzes the manufacturing system, and it helps to reduce waste and CO2 emissions in the manufacturing process, which is awesome. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing how AI technology will evolve CMF development and all the new creative ideas that spawn from it.
Me too. I think the possibilities seem so endless, isn't it? And it's only really limited by your own imagination. I'm also joined by Matt Zara, strategist on my global team of trend forecasters. Hey, Matt, let's bring you in here. I know that you've done some research into responsible AI. So what's an issue around AI that you expect to be prominent over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think over the next few years, it's going to be so, so difficult to work out what's real and what's not. Deepfakes are already getting so, so lifelike that people struggle to discern what's real and what's not. And you see these images that just get shared millions of times online with people thinking that they're real. For those that don't know, deepfakes are when media has been manipulated to make it look like someone's said something or done something that they haven't. And these ideas aren't new, but the difference is now that they've become so much more accessible and so much cheaper that anyone can really get involved. I think really important to bear in mind that we've got another US election coming up soon, another UK election coming soon, as well as countless more, I'm sure, all over the world. So it's going to be super, super important. So also something we're seeing with the Hollywood writers and actors strikes at the moment, I think one of their concerns, well, amongst many, is that this fear that their likeness could just be replaced by whoever owns the right to their image. So you kind of lose that agency over your image as well.
That's actually in popular media. It's often been discussed, right? How actors lose control, especially voice actors now, because it's just so easy with AI right now.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's so easy to clone those voices that kind of just, it's out of their control at that point. I guess the fortunate thing is people do have a plan for this. People are thinking about it. Google announced earlier this year that it's going to watermark any AI-generated content and that watermark will remain intact even if someone goes on and edits the image after, which I think is a positive step. There's also companies that are using AI to detect deepfakes. Company called DuckDuckGoose from the Netherlands, which isn't to be confused with the web browser of a similar name, but they can look at deepfake video and use AI to work out whether it's been deepfaked and who's behind it. Another plan actually I've seen to tackle it, which I liked, was from Adobe. So rather than trying to prevent sort of unethical use of AI, which is really impossible because it's just always going to happen, they've flipped it on its head, and their plan is to help good actors prove their veracity. So it's founded something called the Content Authenticity Initiative, and it's a free verification system for content creators. So they can create content and then mark that content to show whether AI was used or not. And the idea is that if you have these trusted media outlets, they can then, yeah, prove their veracity.
Well, actually, what you just said sounds both terrifying, but hopeful at the same time, which is good. I've also heard recently that people are talking more about sustainability concerns around AI. So have you seen much on that in your research?
Yeah, I have. And I think it's an area that's actually gone quite underrepresented so far. I think people still don't realize that every single prompt they put into ChatGPT is using energy. And that creates heat and it creates CO2 emissions. I think the data centers, like many of which are responsible for running these AI models, are producing CO2 emissions that are on par with those created by the entire aviation industry. So it's a huge issue. And of course, this isn't unique to AI, but I think it's particularly pressing because of the sheer amount of content being created at the moment and the computing power that it takes to produce that. And it's not just energy, it's water too. So these data centers need to be cooled using water. So for instance, a sort of 20 or so question conversation with ChatGPT can use as much as 500 milliliters of water. So if you think about how many people are using it every single day, you can kind of see how that problem adds up. And the building of these cooling centers also can have really, really bad effects on the environment, often requires draining nearby rivers and displacing the community, the rural communities that actually live around those areas. So can have a huge, huge negative impact.
And that's so important to be aware of, right? That the resources required to upkeep all these data centers that you just talked about, these are not known. And so I think it's a good thing that we're talking more about this in our forecasts as well. And so knowing all this now, what can brands do to be more responsible with AI?
I think it's really important when you're building these tools or you're using them as a brand to realize that bias creates bias, essentially. All the tech we use is shaped by the biases of those who create it. And if you're putting bad input into this thing, you're going to get bad output. You need to really think about kind of the diversity of a data set, the motivations of the tool. And I think without tackling those biases in wider society, it's hard to create better tech, really. I think it's also really important just to be transparent. I think you need to know who's using the tool, like who's building, sorry, the tools that you're using, like the biases they might have, what are their motivations, what data sets are they using. I think also that transparency kind of is an internal thing, so it comes from us too. It's fine to admit that we don't know everything about AI. No one does at this stage. It's still very early. Brands are still learning. So I think they need to be kind of open to that as well, open to feedback, open to criticism. But one thing they can do is almost conduct an AI audit, I suppose. So look at their business or their product, work out which areas of this actually benefit from AI, or do we just want to use it because it's the latest tech buzzword? You've got to think, you know, will it actually result in a better product or a better quality of life for employees? Because if not, then do you really want to, are you just doing it for the sake of it? I think the last thing that brands can do, especially people working within brands, is just act now. I think these things, change begins with us. You've got to push for ethical implementation of AI where it is used. Educate yourself on the risks, as we said, whether that's kind of the risks to people or the planet. And then also, I guess, vote for the people that you expect to regulate it appropriately.
Yes, that's a really good point, Matt. Educate yourself, be informed, and then push for positive change. You're listening to the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. And in this episode, we're talking about the hype around generative AI and how the tech helps the creative process. I'm Lisa Yong, Director of Consumer Tech at WGSN. And my guests today are Reiko Morrison, Head of CMF, and Matt Zara, strategist on my global team of trend forecasters. It's always been curious and interesting to me how different generations perceive or think about AI, especially how they use it or how it impacts their lives. I think also, you know, especially with new generations of creatives entering into the workforce now, are they using AI specifically in their work, in terms of it doesn't matter whether it's another tool in the design toolbox, it just is. And they're not so much afraid of it, right? So coming back to that point of, you know, whether AI will take away creative jobs, do you think that would help because of a different generation's perception of how they use AI, Reiko?
That's really interesting, Lisa, to think about. And I know from my own experience, you know, AI is already embedded in so many of the creative tools that we use, you know, especially in Adobe products. And I would say since I learned Adobe a while ago, that I'm probably not as up to speed as people that are coming right out of school, you know? And I think younger generations are more cognizant of these tools and what they can do. I mean, I just look at what my kids do on their phones and when they take pictures and they figured out how to take objects out. That is AI that is analyzing the photo and being able to replace an object with the background. And they just zip through it. And I didn't even know that feature existed. So I think that's the big difference between the generations, is it will take more effort for older generations to learn these tools. But younger people are just, you know, it's just part of everyday life. They expect it.
This is the thing, I think, in the same way you've had the kind of digital native, you'll have the AI native. It's, if you're growing up with these things, they do just become second nature. And I think it will just become, whether you're a designer, whether you're a writer, you know, anything these tools can be used for, it just becomes another kind of tool in your toolkit. I think it will get to a point, maybe quite soon, actually, where kind of saying, oh, did you use AI to help you do that? It's almost like saying, did you use the internet? It's just so kind of, it will almost just not be a question anymore.
Yeah, it's so natural. It comes naturally. And I think the speed of it helps too, right? The younger generation is all about instant speed right now. It kind of aligns with this whole idea of AI helping them to ideate or to do things faster as well, without too much of the cumbersome tools that we used to do with the older ways of getting there. And I do wonder also, as trend forecasters at WGSN, how do you think AI affects the work that we do right now? And Matt, I'd like to pose that question to you.
My hope, I suppose, is that AI can almost be a sort of superpowered intern, and it can take over all the sort of more everyday, mundane bits of my job, like scheduling and calendars and sorting meetings, all that kind of thing that no one really wants to, or data entry, the things we don't really want to spend loads of time doing, and actually free up more time for me to be a trend forecaster. So I think, you know, once I can, the more of those bits of my job that I can automate, it means I can do things like go to more trade shows or meet more people in person, sort of make the most of those face-to-face interactions and get a kind of deeper level of understanding and hopefully add a richness to my reports as well. So I think as long as it's kind of, again, used responsibly and used ethically, I think it could actually be a really kind of helpful, play a sort of supporting role to my job rather than replace me altogether.
What about you, Reiko? What do you think?
I think WGSN has already been using AI in our data tools. And, you know, the AI is able to sift through a lot of imagery, a lot of information to figure out what's trending. And that is a really important tool to have. You know, early on in my career, I was downloading all the catwalk images and categorizing them by color to see, you know, what were the colors that, you know, were on the catwalk the most. And now the AI can just do that in, you know, an instant. Things like that become proprietary data, and they make forecasting more accurate, you know, more tied to the real world. We still need the foresight of creative individuals, and everybody at WGSN, you know, we have that type of foresight to analyze this data, but then to also take it a step further. You know, the data is only looking at what's existing now, but it takes that foresight, that creative thinking to speculate what's going to happen next. But we can make those decisions more accurately now because of AI.
I think that's exactly right. It's really about using AI as your super assistant, but you still have to guide it. You know, the critical thinking, the experience, the nuanced part of it is still very much human. And you can't really replace that. Not yet, anyway.
I think Reiko makes a really good point as well, that this stuff isn't new. And I think the problem here is that people don't realize that. There's almost a bit of an education gap again, in that AI is in everything. It's in your TikTok For You page. It's your Netflix recommendations. It's Google Maps, like you're saying in the intro, Lisa. But I think people just don't quite realize that yet. And until that understanding catches up, there's always going to be that gap. And I wrote a report on responsible AI recently, and one of the things I was shocked by, it was that almost half of Americans don't even think they interact with AI at all. So there's still this huge gap of understanding. And I think until people are able to get up to speed, it's hard for people to kind of understand and use the technology properly.
But isn't that a successful story? Because when technology disappears, when we don't really know that it's working in the background, that's when the tech is working.
It's true. But then I guess, is it a case of sort of ignorance is bliss? The more we understand these things, the more we can kind of use them to our benefit, and I guess ensure that we're not exploited by them as well. But yeah, I know what you mean, Reika.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I think I'm fine with technology disappearing as long as I have still some semblance of control, that I could still know when I need it, when I do not need it. I think that's still very important. And I think that's part of this growing concern that people feel, that AI might just take over and you have no control of it.
I think you need that transparency of where your data is going, what it's being used to train, because you need to be, you know, you need to be aware that everything you enter into these chatbots or these image generation tools, you are feeding it data, you're training it. So I think, again, it's just being wary of that as well.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, anything that you put on the internet never disappears. Anything that you feed into the AI, it's going to be feeding, you know, other people's results. So you do have to be cognizant.
And when you spoke of biases, Matt, earlier on, I think it's also very important to stress that oftentimes a lot of these recent AI development is still very much done through the Western lens. And we're not taking into account how people in Asia might be using it or in Latin America might be using it. And it's just coming back to, how does this help or hinder marginalized communities? And we have to be really, really aware of this, as well as be more proactive in creating a more balanced societal use as well as expectations of AI in the future, in the very near future, I must say.
Yeah, that's interesting. I read an article recently from this Black writer. I've forgotten her name now, but she was saying that, you know, there's a push for improvements in AI and representative data sets. And she was talking in the context of facial recognition technology. And she was saying, actually, why do I want facial recognition technology to be better at recognizing Black faces if it's just going to be used as a tool of oppression? So it's that representation in the data sets and the people building these tools, but then it's about how they're used in the end as well. And you've got to make sure you're using these things ethically as well.
So let's round up this discussion. It's been a fantastic one. So thank you very much. I'd like to ask you both this question. Are you most anxious or excited about AI? Let's start with Reiko.
I think because my day-to-day focus is mostly design and creative focused, I am definitely excited about what AI is already doing, but I know that it's going to get better with more input. And I am really excited about seeing how humans can figure out how to use this technology to create more ideas, to start breaking out of what we've been seeing year over year over year, and just really start to look at ideas, you know, from the standpoint of what really speaks to us, not just what everybody else is doing. I think creatives are already acknowledging that when AI is drawing from a public pool of imagery, that it's just giving us standard results. But when we can customize it and put our own ideas into it and see it spin out, you know, brand new ideas that are kind of like ours, but, you know, have things that we didn't actually think of. That's what I'm looking forward to. Just really fresh ideas.
It's a tough one. I would say overall, I'm excited, but that comes with a huge caveat, I suppose, which is that I want the implementation to be responsible and I want it to be ethical, which I know is a big ask of big tech, but we'll see how that goes. I think one of the things that makes me so excited, which is something we've not touched on much today, but is things like medical research. I think thanks to AI, you can trial drugs at speed. You can conduct these huge trials that would usually take years and years and years. And that means you're more likely to discover cures for things and treatments for things. And I think there's such huge potential in the medical world that that gives me hope, because that could solve so many things. So it's it's excitement, but with an asterisk next to it.
Yeah, I'm excited. As a trend forecaster, as a researcher, I think it's really exciting times that we live in right now. And it's just also very overwhelming because there's just so much development right now when it comes to AI. But I think also right now there's so much concentration just on one small portion of AI, which is generative AI, that I feel like, to Matt, your point, the other aspects of AI technology that is really advancing the medical industry or environmental sustainability, addressing those issues, those are not often talked about. And we should actually, you know, talk about it more, and we will. So yes, I think I'm in equal parts excited to know what's coming up next. I won't say anxious, but I want to also be able to train myself, my own brain, to be better and not rely on technology too much at the same time. Thank you so much, Reiko and Matt, for joining me today. I am Lisa Yong, and that is it for this episode of Create Tomorrow. If you're a WGSN subscriber, please check out our consumer tech reports that cover a wide range of topics. And if you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to WGSN.com and discover how you can get access to our service. You can subscribe to Create Tomorrow on all major podcast platforms. We'll be back in 2 weeks for our next episode. You can catch the CEO of WGSN, Carla Busashi, next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow.